And we are live. Welcome
We're live.
everyone. Yes. Welcome everyone. This is another episode of On.NET, a weekly show where we discuss all things .NET with the .NET team and guests. But today we don't have any guests. It's just us. We have a new member of the team, or not a new member of the team, but a member of the team who is making his first appearance on the show. Hi, Z.
Hi, guys.
Good to have you.
So, and thank you.
Is Z your birth name, or is it? Do you have a longer name than that?
I have a very much longer name, which will remain unsaid at this time.
Entertain us, please.
Okay, it's Zlatko. It actually means golden boy in Serbian. I kid you not. Anyways, people probably know me by my GitHub handle, which is Black Dwarf. So, for those of you who hang around CoreCLR, CoreFX, or CLI repos, I'm Black Dwarf. So, nice to meet you.
And we also have Rich, as usual. Hi, Rich.
Hi.
Okay, so today we want to talk about a few, some of the news that we have around .NET Core, and in particular, the project system. There's been interesting things going on about the project system, and we want to talk about that. Rich, do you want to?
Yeah.
I'm putting you on the spot right there.
A little bit. So, so there was discussed at the ASP.NET community stand-up yesterday, and we saw some of the comments that were raised. We actually saw that there's a survey that's been put out. That folks are, I guess, voting on. Actually, we're happy to share the link to that. If someone wants to post that into the chat, that'd be cool. I'd love to see the results of that. So we actually did, we collected some of those questions, and we thought we'd actually just kind of talk through those as a conversation, and that would help provide some more insight. Damien on the ASP.NET community stand-up did some of that yesterday, which is great. And I thought we would just maybe go into both a little bit more depth and also just reiterate what he already said. So I think the first question is why? I think that's a fairly natural place to start. So why are we making this change? Actually, let me back up for a minute. There was actually something else I wanted to say first, which was I think some people are wondering, like, is there a stability kind of problem with .NET Core? Like, you know, did this released RC1 with kind of one configuration, RC2 has one configuration, and then RTM after that will have another one. And so is there any stability concern with the product? And the answer is really no. We released something at RC1 that was go live. We believed that it was go live, and we actually have customers running on that in production workloads. We've made improvements to the runtime and framework.
Can you actually tell the names of some of those customers?
So that's an excellent question. I'm unaware that I haven't asked those customers if we could say that. I don't know if you have some in mind that are public, then that would be fine.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. So how about that? Let's find out and invite some of them on the show.
Sounds good. Anyway. Continuing on my thought pattern, one of the reasons we're shipping now in the middle of this transition is those customers want something that's production quality past RC1, and we feel like we really need to deliver that to them. The runtime and framework and the ASP.NET libraries have only improved on that kind of production quality journey. And we've made some great performance, some reliability fixes, and just general improvements. And we feel like those customers and the ones that still want to adopt should get those. We also feel like the RC2 developer experience is a step forward from what we had at RC1, so we feel like now is a good time to ship. We have some more changes that we're making past this, but once again, those are really at this tooling layer. Yeah, I guess that's the thing I didn't mention. We have runtime and framework, tooling, ASP.NET, and then kind of Visual Studio VS Code at the top. This command line tooling layer is the part that's changing, but it doesn't in any way take away from the quality level that we have in the runtime framework and ASP.NET. So it's completely stable and is only getting better day by day. So that was the part we would start with.
The deployable bits, the stuff that you're going to deploy to your server or deploy to end users, that is stable and that is going to change very little between now and RTM, correct?
Right. Yeah, so Damien in the show yesterday talked a little bit about our release mechanics. He said we have this concept of, so during a release, you know, developers, like the engineering team, works on their components and they fix bugs kind of in a, like they make the decisions on which bugs to fix and they go do that and they check those fixes in and it's all good. We actually don't have really a word for describing that period of the product other than just normal. Then we go into tell mode, which means that you still get to choose which fixes to make, but you just send an email or some other kind of notification to an approval body to say, I'm making this fix. They're free to weigh in and say maybe this isn't a good idea, but it's not kind of an approval thing. Then we move to ask mode, where you actually have to ask for approval before making a change. And then we move to this thing called escrow, which basically means no changes are allowed unless it's like an emergency. Anyway, so my whole reason for bringing that up is as we move to the RTM milestone, we're kind of in this tell mode sort of period, somewhere between tell and ask mode. We will take, performance and reliability fixes, but in terms of, we're not taking really any more APIs for RTM unless, significantly required. We're not going to take too many changes to other parts of the product because we want to make sure that, it doesn't change much. And then the significant changes will come after RTM. So we definitely want to put a 1.0 out there that is stable and that people can use and start building apps on and feel like they have a stable base.
Mm. So in the we've labeled what we're shipping RC2, and then there is a dash, and preview 1 tooling, correct?
Yeah.
Maybe that dash should have been an end or something. So the runtime stuff is RC2, and the tooling is considered preview.
Yeah, we spent a little bit of time with the little symbols that we put there.
So it's not RC2 preview 1, right?
No,
that would be meaningless.
It is meaning that would be meaningless. That's not what it is. We wanted a way to describe that the runtime and framework and ASP.NET are RC2. And then tooling is preview. It's really hard in a string that isn't a sentence, like that isn't really allowed to have a period in it, to kind of have this separation, but that's basically the point. So the thing that folks talked about at the community stand-up yesterday is the thing that's changing is, so we've been on this CLI train. Actually, Z on the call is the program manager for that feature area. So, that's the thing that has project.json. It has the .NET command, and our tooling is all built on top of that. That is indeed what we're shipping. We're just realizing that that particular configuration of stuff is not on kind of just an evolutionary plan to RTM. We actually have some revolutionary changes coming in, and we've decided to adopt MS Build, the existing build system, instead of continuing with this new build system that we've been working on. So that's why it's called Preview. If we weren't on this change, meaning if we weren't going to move to MS Build, we would have actually called the whole thing RC2. It's not that the CLI is exactly preview quality. We would have been happy to call the whole thing RC2, say this, the tooling is RC2 quality too, and it's on a path to RTM. So that part is a little bit confusing too. It's not that the quality of the tooling is bad. It's just we know that there's a significant change coming to it. Does that make sense?
Sure. And while we're talking about shipping, when are we shipping?
Yeah, so we're going to ship RC2. Our plan is to ship it next week. And then our plan is to ship RTM by the end of June, which is, I believe, just
so
next month.
About RC2, what I've heard, the latest I've heard was on Monday, barring locusts.
Barring locusts?
Yeah, I think that's a true statement, barring locusts. Hopefully no locusts.
yes, we will definitely avoid the locusts.
Please not locusts. They're really bad.
I'm not sure that joke is entirely... all cultures will get it, but we're working on that hard.
Okay, and another thing that we wanted to say is that there are a lot of questions flying around about that change in the project system and the build system. We are looking at all those questions, and we are actually preparing a blog post that will be published sometime next week.
There's probably going to be a couple of blog posts that will go into significant detail around the whys and what is the roadmap and what can people expect, what is the migration path, and all of those other stuff that people started asking since the community stand-up yesterday, ASP.NET community stand-up yesterday. So I think it's going to be really clarifying to people, and it's going to allow them to... actually internalize the context of the entire change much better than Twitter, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, why are we changing things all the time, and that sort of question. We want to answer all of those questions and more, and we want to answer them in a way that is thoughtful and that is completely, that is representative of our current thinking, and so we want to take the time to write this down in a way that will give people the answers they deserve for their questions.
Yep.
Yeah. So maybe we should attack the why question.
Sure.
Yeah, I think we're so
sure.
far.
Yeah. There are a few that we can actually answer now, and why is probably the one that we should. Address.
It's the one that comes up first, right?
Yeah, well, I wanted to talk about the what first. I think we did that over the last 5 minutes.
Yes, you're right. We've actually talked about this in the abstract here without even... We talk about the change, and we are not saying what the change is. So, yeah, that's a good point.
The biggest change.
Yeah, so I think really this... project.json and .NET CLI, when we originally started it, we had this concept of, you know, it's going to be super simple. You'll be able to have a build system, you know, a mature existing build system drive it. But .NET CLI will just be a set of mechanics. And so I think that was a bit... a bit naive on our part that we could actually achieve that, because one of the first things that happened is we said, like, oh, you know, this build system's kind of slow. There's actually a lot of opportunity for optimization. And so we actually added a parallel build to .NET CLI. And we were actually starting to look at adding more and more build system type features to this. and we eventually came to the realization that we were actually at a significant fork in the road of either taking actually significant parts of code, either code or concepts from MS Build and adding them to this new system, or just saying, why would we try and rebuild something that already exists? And why not just go back to that? So I think that was the first thing, which was realizing that we needed a real build system here, and realizing that there were a couple of choices, and so we picked one, which is to go back to MS Build and not build something new. Another one was, we realized we definitely needed orchestration between different project types. And so in a world where all the projects you wanted to build were .NET Core projects, it was reasonable to use project.json for that. At the point where you had a dependency that was built in C++ and you needed to invoke a native toolchain, or you actually had to build for another operating system, like say Android, it started to become a little bit too much because this build system would start to need to have knowledge of those other project types, as opposed to just having an orchestrating build engine that was just capable of, kind of like aggregating different assets together, but not necessarily needing to know anything about how they're produced. So that was another one. I'm just going to take a pause there before I go any further. Do you guys have anything to say about that? Anything to add?
No, I think you're going pretty well.
Okay, wow. That's actually very positive feedback from Z.
Well, come on. I get positive feedback. Well, what?
Okay, next one is a major focus of project.json was the merging of NuGet consumption and production into a single format and experience. That was a good goal. But as we actually looked into this project-related orchestration that I just talked about, we realized that not only might a build system need to build different assets, but in the process of building a NuGet package, you might actually have to build and aggregate assets from completely disparate types of systems, and having NuGet production be kind of the overarching metaphor, if you will, or concept that pulled that all together seemed like not the right model. It seemed like you should have a system that could end in NuGet production, but it should not be the act of NuGet production that should be the thing that drives the whole system. So it really is a sense of, like, should NuGet production be the center of the model, or should it be more like the last tool that runs in a system? And so we decided that it should be the latter, and MS Build aligns much better with that kind of approach. You guys have anything to say about that?
One question that I have is, and that I'm actually repeating a question that comes from the community here. What were the influences for those decisions? Is it, is it something that was decided in the Microsoft Ivory Tower, or is it actually based on community feedback and so on?
That's a good question. I would say the first piece of feedback we got, I don't know if it was the first, but the one that caused us the most pause is we started to talk to the Xamarin folks about integrating project.json-based projects into Xamarin Studio and MonoDevelop, which are kind of the same thing. And that was, I want to word this in a very specific way. that was something that didn't seem natural to them. They had taken a big dependency on CS Proj and MS Build. It was working well for them. And I guess I'd say some of these problems around orchestration are more obviously problematic in, say, an iOS or an Android app, and less obviously problematic in a web app, just because, I guess, in client apps in general, you're very quick to hit the native platform. In a web server, that's less likely. I mean, it's more of a controlled bubble. Certainly, it's not that it's strange to call into native code from a web server. It's just, it's less on the main path. So anyway, I think that's where that feedback started to come from them. The other thing, I'm not really answering your question, but I'll get there. The other place where we got to, I wouldn't say feedback per se, but observation, is we were spending a lot of time getting CS Proj and X Proj projects to talk to one another. And not only it was both super complicated, but was also using a lot of engineering resources, which is definitely contributing a lot to our schedule problems. So I guess that was another major driver to this decision. In terms of customer feedback, we've heard that from a few different places. I know with people who are VSIP, or people that write plugins to Visual Studio, I know that they've talked to us about, like, you know, they've made a huge investment on MS Build-based projects, and they have asked us, like, oh, well, how do we write Visual Studio plugins for XProj? We actually don't know how to do that, and we'll just take a wait-and-see approach for, this is how they termed it, for, you know, ASP.NET 5 projects, ASP.NET Core projects. We'll see how that goes to see if it's worth our time. And so that was definitely a piece of friction. If we were using MS Build, that conversation wouldn't even exist. They'd say, oh, we're happy to have our particular plugin support another Microsoft project type because it just naturally works with the tooling that they've already built. That was one piece. Another one is there was definitely a ton of customer feedback around migration to .NET Core and ASP.NET Core. Some of that is APIs, but a bunch of that is tooling related. It's sometimes actually hard to separate out what the particular piece of migration pain is. So I would say we're getting feedback from both close partners like Xamarin, partners that like build plugins for Visual Studio, and a ton of just general customer feedback around migration. Does that help?
Yeah, it does. And there is another piece of feedback that we're getting a lot these days, which is that a lot of people actually like project.json very much and want to know what we are going to do to make MS Build more friendly to those command line driven scenarios, for example, or manual authoring of the files. And that is something that we want to answer very specifically in the blog posts that we're preparing.
Yeah, so there's going to be, there will be a lot of details about that, as you said, in the blog post. And there's definitely value in project.json, and there are definitely, as you said, people who have actually really liked the experience working with it, the features that it brought with it. The command line first scenarios are extremely important for us, so we'll definitely work with.
And we love those scenarios, to be fair.
Oh yeah, well, I personally do, right? Because I'm a PM for the CLI, so I spend my time mostly in terminals. So definitely, we will have something. We will have additions to CS Proj, changes to CS Proj and MS Build that will make them much, much more CLI first friendly, right? Which is something that we learned from project.json that people really want and like. And especially the interplay between the people working in Visual Studio and other people maybe collaborating with a piece on a piece of code or a project from the command line rather than using Visual Studio. So all of those details will be in the blog post.
Yes.
Anything else you guys want to add about the project system, or should we move on to other topics?
I'm just looking through my notes.
That's always dangerous.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a why now question. Like, I think there's a reasonable question of why not ship .NET Core as 1.0 and then, you know, make it stable and then make these set of changes for 2.0. I think that's one way of interpreting the why now question. And I think we could have done that. It would not be a completely unreasonable thing. I think the issue is we would have considered that to be kind of a breaking change. And so we really feel it's necessary to get those all done,
straight,
for lack
yeah.
of a better term, before 1.0. We believe that once we ship 1.0, we're going to see a significant amount of adoption, much more than naturally that we've seen during this pre-release period. And so to a large degree, I think this is actually a significant transparency that there's a change coming, and we feel like this is the best way to deal with it, with this kind of preview moniker, for lack of a better term, with the tooling. And so we'll just continue to be transparent about it. This is the point in time where we're actively working on this change, and yeah, we could have done it later, but we don't think that would have been the most transparent thing to do. So we didn't do that.
So we do have a question from the audience here, from Joao, and I'm not entirely sure that I'm parsing his question right, but I'll try to do my best here. I think he's asking whether we will involve the community more in the decision process itself, not just in providing feedback, but in actually making the decisions. And I think that's something we should probably address, but in a more general way. I mean, it's just not about the project system and that specific decision. More in general, the way we make decisions on the project. And there are a lot of things to consider about that. Many, if not most, of the decisions are actually engineering decisions. And the way we take feedback from the community and the way the community actually provides code into the project and so on is a very delicate balance to achieve. And the perception of it can vary greatly from one person to another. Do you want to talk about that? I think it's a really interesting question.
It is. So I think there definitely is a split between, and this is kind of what you're talking about, between customer experience-oriented decisions and engineering ones. Like, you know, I will say flat out that we came to the conclusion that we couldn't productize the product we were building as it related to the tooling layer. We came to the conclusion that we were on a path that was going to incur us incredible expense, and we couldn't quite see completely around the corner of it. So, you know, it's certainly, if we would have put this out to a public vote kind of thing, it could have been the case that there were a significant audience that didn't want us to go back to MS Build. And that certainly would have been interesting. We didn't feel like there was another option. So we didn't feel like it was an A versus B sort of discussion, which is why we just made the decision. Like once we actually realized that really we had to do this, we didn't actually have that long of a period. It really came down to just a few days where we put this discussion on the table, and it wasn't a protracted thing. We felt this was our only engineering option available to us, mainly for the reasons I already gave, which is there's so much weight behind MS Build and CS Proj for .NET, both in Visual Studio and outside, and the burden of breaking from that from an engineering standpoint is very high, and we definitely need to be much more efficient than that. I do think that there's an interesting question of, like, you know, could MS Build ever have a JSON input to allow people more the project.json type of developer experience? That is a completely reasonable question, and maybe that is something we should consider. That's something that definitely would love to see customer feedback on, but we couldn't continue with the path that we were on. So, yeah, that's why we didn't put it out to a vote.
Okay. Sounds good. The XML versus JSON question is somewhat orthogonal to the more general question, but it is definitely one we see a lot and one we want to address in the future. Another one is about other build systems, because the community has actually come up with some pretty amazing build systems that are not MS Build. So what's up with that? That is also something that that we want to address, and the bottom line is that we really want people to be able to use the build system that they love, right?
Yeah, we're definitely. Sorry, you want to go?
No, all please. Right.
Okay, we're definitely looking into. We're definitely exploring with this change, seeing how we can actually provide people with an ability to integrate their own favorite thing, like cake, fake, something else, right? It's still TBD, to be decided, on how this thing will look and how this thing will behave. At this point, the CLI doesn't really have this integration point, to be very honest. We still haven't built it. So any feedback and input on that would be actually quite welcome. But we are definitely looking into how to provide those integration points and how to have let people, as you said, Bertrand, use what they actually like.
Great. All right.
Yeah, I'll just say one more. Can I say one more thing about that?
Yeah, sure, of course.
Which is there's this balance between a completely open-ended system and also making sure that there's a great experience that we provide in Visual Studio and VS Code and Xamarin Studio for building .NET projects. So, pardon me, we kind of see the build system that we provide, which will be MS Build, as I guess a vertical in that sense for those particular experiences. Those will definitely be the defaults within Visual Studio. And, you know, when we talk to people about adopting, you know, .NET Core or Xamarin or whatever, you know, .NET for UWP, we'll be talking to them in terms of these build systems, because we know we can build a quality experience around those. But we definitely see .NET as kind of a, well, maybe this is a Microsoft term, but as a big tent ecosystem. And we definitely want to leave tons of room for people to experiment and for other systems to become popular. I mean, you know, you see what goes on in JavaScript land with, you know, some JavaScript frameworks get really popular and get a ton of usage. Some peak quickly and kind of fall away. You know, that can happen in the .NET ecosystem too. It's totally fine.
Oh, you mean you want a new framework every day?
I think you get the point.
Grunt, no, Yelp, no, NPM, no.
No, broccoli. There's also a broccoli. Don't forget that.
Mm-hmm. So. I mean, there's lots of points you can fit on the spectrum. This is not in any way saying that there is one and can only ever be one system. It's broader than that, for sure.
Yeah.
I know you're joking.
Just joking.
I know.
I happen to like Node. Okay, so what is in what we're shipping next week? What's in RC2? After that, we can talk about the future of the platform.
Yeah, you guys should tell us. You guys are the ones who have actually been working on RC2. I just sit in my office.
Well, there is obviously the CLI tooling is in RC2. The .NET command, the driver, all of these CLI commands like restore, new, build. Obviously, we talked so much about build in this episode.
And test. Don't forget test.
Test is also there. Yes, that's very important. Also, the extensibility points are there via NuGet, a way for you to actually get in your own tools that you may want or have and be able to invoke them via the .NET syntax. For instance, the Entity Framework tools will work in such a way, and also some of the ASP.NET tools in ASP.NET projects. So that's in RC2. A lot of people, I think, followed very closely the CLI repo and what's been happening on that. So that's one of the big things. There's also going to be, actually, maybe Richard wants to talk about the actual stuff that's inside the platform.
Inside the platform.
Yes, new stuff. Oh, you mean inside the runtime, yes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Sorry about that.
yeah, that's a good question. Actually, I asked the team to produce a diff of RC1 APIs versus RC2 APIs. They actually still have not delivered that yet. We actually need that for our blog post on next week. So I actually don't have a concrete list to share there. I'm not sure. Actually, the RC1 was so long ago, it was November. Actually, I really don't have good insight on how many APIs have been added. I know the team was working on various things, but I don't want to say too many of those out loud because I'm not too sure how many made RC2. But yeah, so there's a bunch of new APIs. We'll describe what those are. On the runtime side, you know, I think I know we added background GC on Linux. That was definitely something that was missing. Not exactly a runtime feature per se, but we actually added like breakpoint and stepping debugging in VS Code. That was a collaboration between the VS Code extension folks and the runtime team who owned the debugger API. So that's a nice experience. Then another one, which is not runtime at all, is I know the folks who have been working on Kestrel, this is just stuff that's coming to my mind, have actually continued to make some nice performance improvements. It seems like every month they add kind of like 500,000 requests per second to the work that they've been doing, which is super impressive. They actually just told me a couple of days ago that they've hit some new thresholds. Amazing what they're doing. So I'm actually not entirely confident that all of those changes have made it into RC2, but they'll certainly get faulted in relatively soon. So those are some changes we've made. Make sense?
Yep.
I mean, so all in all, I mean, we're quite happy with, you know, we've made a lot of change since RC2. I mean, the other thing is, which Z did not talk about, even though it's part of his part, at least I don't think you did, is with DNX, you had this concept of kind of a runtime. You could have multiple runtimes in the box and you could target them. A given command prompt was tied to a given runtime with an environment, in an environmental way, with an environment variable. We have retained the idea of side-by-side runtimes, but you bind to them through local configuration files, and it means you could have, you know, 200 apps on the machine. They could depend on 200 runtimes on the box. You could run them all from the same command prompt, and there would be no, you know, unintentional interplay between them.
So the only thing that's on the path is the actual driver and execution host, and the execution, the actual version of the framework that you use is specified in your project file. So when you execute your app using .NET path to your assembly, or what you actually get, the version you run against, is the version that you built against. So there's no need to have something like DNX, a specific version of a runtime on the path, and then you have to switch between those when you run, and then, you know, there were all these kind of weird stuff that happened if you had a wrong version and you do DNX run and then something doesn't work and you realize, oh, wait a second, I have to switch stuff out. So this time it's much cleaner model for people to run their apps. You're right. I did not mention that.
Yeah, you worked on that, right?
Small bit.
Actually, I know you're actually an interesting person to have on the team.
Oh, because, really?
Yeah, because I know there's certain things that you find to be distasteful, and like one of the ones that you talked to me about was this idea of having global state in those environment variables, just because of the headache that it can cause. So I know that was something that
yes, I have a very, when it comes to development time stuff, I do have a very, very weird, I guess, compared to other people, very weird outlook, if you will, on stuff setting environment variables all over the place and messing with my, as you said, global state in my terminal, and then stuff blowing up for reasons that I cannot really immediately recognize why. So yeah, anything, I like small isolated things that are runnable by themselves. So you could say I'm a Docker fan by that definition, but you know, you wouldn't be wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, so this new system where the state is the configuration of which runtime and packages that you rely on being stored local to the app in a file aligns nicely with that kind of viewpoint and philosophy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I guess another thing is we actually do support two modes. One is the idea of relying on a centrally installed runtime, and then we actually do support standalone apps as well that have the runtime being part of it.
So yeah,
go ahead.
There are two types essentially of apps if you want to look at portability that you can write in RC2. One is the portable app. That's the name we're using. I shouldn't do this because it is actually portable. It's portable to wherever you installed .NET Core on. And there is another concept which is standalone, as Richard said, or I like to call it self-contained, because it kind of like explains, at least to me, it explains much better the concept, which is where you package your application and runtime and everything it needs to run in a singular folder, and then you can deploy that folder on any machine that .NET Core runs on without actually having .NET Core installed on it and run it. And the CLI tooling allows you to have to produce both of these types of apps.
Yeah, I would say we've probably put a lot more polish into the portable type of application than the standalone one.
That's true.
Yeah. I think, though, that people should not take that as a like, we care, I would say, equally about both of those.
We care deeply about the self-contained scenario because we had a lot of customer feedback, both internally and externally, that people are really, really excited about this opportunity to actually run their apps in such a way, package and run their apps in such a way. It's just that at this point, we optimized for getting portable scenario right, if you will, and self-contained, it's not, it's just slight, it has slightly more, a couple of more gestures that you need to do to get it running, which are not that difficult. All of that is documented in the docs that you can access on .net github.io/docs. But we'll definitely be investing some time into polishing the self-contained slash standalone experience as well for RTM of the tooling. So,
yeah, I mean, the way I think about it is we knew we needed both modes. I'd say the portable type of app aligns. It's most similar to what we already have with .NET Framework. And we definitely have customers that were going to use that. This is going to be grossly incorrect, but we felt like building the portable story was like one unit of effort, and we knew that building standalone was probably like three units of effort. So we brought the portable experience to a certain level of polish that we were more or less happy with. And we got kind of one unit's worth of the three units through the standalone one. It's still, you know, usable. It's just that it's not as easy to use as we would like. That polish for standalone or self-contained, as you say, will come in later releases. But we care deeply about both. Is that fair?
That's pretty fair, yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my one unit versus three units is grossly incorrect, but
it is. But let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, it's a good framing, I think. Is that fair?
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I would say the team is looking forward to shipping.
We definitely are.
Yeah. One piece is it's been an interesting transition, you know, doing this whole release, particularly with this degree of change out in the open. You know, there's definitely times in the past when we've done closed source software where we've done some significant revisiting of our plans. And, you know, I remember releases that I've been on that have slipped a year. And none of that was visible. I mean, obviously, a schedule ship was slip was visible, but none of the sausage making was visible. And so now it is. I think this is now just my personal feeling. Is I think you know, the openness is definitely here to stay. And I think we need to put out much more kind of, you know, design information and that kind of thing out on, you know, GitHub and blogging and wherever else to help people interpret what these changes are about and why. I think if we had done that, some of this transition would be easier. I think we need to continue with the openness and just expand upon it, and I think people would more easily understand why these changes are occurring. Anyone disagree with that?
I agree with it. More openness sounds good to me.
Yeah. We're definitely still learning.
And the consequence of that, of course, is that everybody can see the sausage being made. But the nice thing is that you can come and make the sausage with us. So.
Yeah.
which might be a little too idiomatic. I don't know. So
yeah.
You can see all in gritty details about the product being built, and the nice thing is that we want the community to build a product with us. And that's actually an interesting question. Can we talk about some examples where we have some amazing community contributions that we want to cut out?
I talked about Kestrel earlier. Ben Adams has made a ton of amazing contributions. We actually have some folks that are, I think everyone knows that our main chip that we've been targeting has been X64. But actually, there's a lot of interest in other chips, completely unsurprisingly. And we actually have a group of like half a dozen people that are working on ARM32, trying to make .NET Core work for ARM32 on Linux. And so I'm not going to go through their names, but that's really impressive to see that there's a community with definitely some support from the Microsoft team for sure. But I would say the community is definitely leading that port. And I'm really excited about that. So those are the two that I would raise.
What are we doing in terms of recognition of those?
Yes. Ones? So excellent question. The team actually asked me a few weeks ago. It's like, we should do some recognition. And I'm hoping to get a list of names from the engineering team to put in either our release notes or our blog or something like that to give recognition. I mean, other projects definitely do things like that. We should too. So maybe you guys can leave that, doing that list of names either from yourself or from the folks that are engineering team, so that we can make that recognition, because it's certainly deserved and a good idea.
Okay, we have a little less than 10 minutes. How about talking about what's next after RTM? Is there, what is going to happen? More APIs?
Yeah, there'll be definitely a focus on APIs, for sure. That'll be a major focus. Landing the tooling completely will be a major focus. I would like to see us support more chips, meaning CPUs. That's super important. I think right now we've performance I think will be a big focus. You know, we've been super focused on some things like the Kestrel web server. I'm personally really happy with where that's headed, but I think that is not the sole place where we should be doing performance optimization. And so I think really what we need to identify, both as a team and certainly with tons of feedback from the community, is what is the top 10 or even 6 list of components where we should be disproportionately investing in performance. I don't have that list in front of me right now. It's not that I don't have any opinions on what should be in there, but I'd love to be able to publish this list of, 6 to 10 things. 10 just feels a little bit too high. Yeah, like about 6 that says this is where we're going to focus on performance to make the product better for workloads where those components get pulled in. So that's my story. What do you guys think?
I think it's a fine idea.
Yep. You forgot to say that we are also looking at the suggestions from the community about what we should be focusing on.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, we should probably have some good way of collecting that. I mean, certainly we've been getting lots of feedback through kind of, varied ways. We haven't really thought about a way of more systematically collecting feedback for post 1.0. So we should think about that. If anyone has some proposals, feedback on how to collect feedback, that'd be interesting. You know, it probably won't just be one thing. We'll probably use some surveys. We'll probably talk to various folks. But we probably want to have a structured approach to that general process. I haven't thought about that at all.
All right. Unless you have anything to add, I think we can conclude with that.
I think that's it. We're super excited about shipping next week. We think we have got a great product that we've built in RC2, and we're going to talk much more next week about where we're headed, and we hope that feels like a shared journey with the community.
Very cool. Well, thanks to both of you for being on the show today. And
thanks
next week, you're welcome. And next week, if everything goes well, we will have Miguel de Icaza again. He was our first guest, and he's coming back next week.
Nice.
Yeah, that would be interesting. The last time was before the acquisition, and now the acquisition is done, so we'll have a lot to talk about.
Yeah,
after.
Yeah.
The slightly funny thing is Miguel and his team have actually been on campus all week. We actually could have had Miguel on the show today here, because he's actually in Redmond, but we wanted to talk about this instead.
And his schedule was way too busy to accommodate for the show. So next week would be quieter for him, and that would be good. All right.
Okay.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for watching, and we'll see you again next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.